Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of HME Business. Welcome back to the HME Business Podcast. And today I'm joined by Mike Lorenz from Brightree to discuss the many benefits and also the challenges in developing a successful resupply system. Mike Lorenz is Brightree's Vice President of Resupply Solutions and has more than 20 years of experience in leadership roles across the banking, technology, and healthcare industries. Before joining Brightree, Mike was the president and head of product at SnapWorks, a startup software company supporting the home medical equipment industry. And prior to SnapWorks, Mike was the CEO of Sound Oxygen Service, a regional home medical equipment company with locations across the Pacific Northwest. At every step, Mike's career has focused on using data to measure critical performance factors in businesses and then implementing technology solutions to leverage organizational strengths at scale. And our podcast today is sponsored by Brightree. Mike, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, as you might imagine, given Mike's title at Brightree, we're going to be talking about home medical equipment resupply, but we're going to be talking about it in conjunction with security, which is obviously a critical topic in today's environment of data breaches. So, Mike, if we could, let's start at the beginning. How would you define or describe a great patient experience in resupply? And how do you balance the goals of providing a quick and convenient patient experience with the need to also provide robust security across all your platforms?
Awesome. Great question. You've got a lot baked in there, so I'll try and take it apart and answer it in turn. Great patient experience. You actually had some of the key factors right in your question. Quick and convenient are definitely two of the factors. When you think about the landscape we're in right now in a consumer economy, everyone is buying products and services on applications. They're buying them over the web. They're buying them on their phone, on iPads. They're speaking to devices mounted in their kitchen. All kinds of ways that they can purchase and participate in economic activity. So when that is the outside world that your patients are living in every day, you kind of need to match that as a provider of any other service. And healthcare is no exception. So we definitely think about fast. Having a quick experience from when a patient orders something to when it arrives at their door is now an expectation in most other parts of the economy. So how do you do that as a provider? Convenient, like you said. Hey, I want to order via text today. Next week, I may want to order via email. The week after that, I may want to order via an app. I may want to go onto a portal. I may want to get a phone call to tell me something's ready. So having a patient experience that's omnichannel that allows the patient to be served wherever they want to be served. And they may not do the same thing every time. Like I just said, where are you today? We're going to meet you there and make sure it's incredibly convenient. And then the one thing that you didn't mention in your question, which leaves me something to add, is transparency. So again, thinking about the regular experience patients go through, hey, I order something. It gets there quickly. And between when I order it and when it gets there, I know where it is and I know what's going on. So that transparency it is really important. And frankly, it's probably more important with healthcare than with ordering shoes because healthcare is so complex. It's confusing to people. Hey, I ordered this thing. Why isn't it here? Not every patient wakes up every day thinking about prior authorizations and insurance verification and renewing prescriptions and all the stuff that you have to do to get a patient their supplies. So that confusion and frustration, how do you minimize that in a great patient experience? Those are very important. But that's kind of how I think about a great patient experience: fast, convenient, transparent. If you just want three bullets, that's a great place to start. And then your question kind of went into, hey, how do you make this secure? And really, there's no option. It has to be in healthcare. We know it's a heavily regulated market. We know our providers care deeply about their patients and want to take care of their patients' information in as good a way as possible. So when you build a patient experience via all these electronic engagement mechanisms, security and reliability have to be baked into your process of building them. So anytime you develop something, you need to have security checklists for the code you're developing. You need to have a separation of concerns on your development team of, hey, we've got some people that develop code, some people that test it, some people that deploy it. They're not all the same people. One person can't make a change and move it all the way through into production. We're pretty blessed at Brightree in that we're owned by a large publicly traded company that has a huge InfoSec department. So we've got a department of individuals that are just focused on this stuff. So we don't have somebody that, hey, on Monday, I care about information security, and on Tuesday, I'm just a developer. We've got people that wake up every day saying, hey, how can I surveil the environment out there and find out what are the threats to various software packages? How can I make our stuff more secure? What are policies and regulations that we need to adhere to? So we've got a great foundation for baking that into our product from the day we start writing new features all the way until they go live.
Okay, and if I could, Mike, I'd like to ask a follow-up question just to make sure I'm understanding it. It sounds like what you don't want to do is come up with a resupply system and then after it's finished or while it's almost finished, then start thinking about security. It feels like those have to go hand in hand from the very start. That would be your best practice, I guess, or your subject matter expertise opinion, correct?
Absolutely. And it's kind of at every layer of your organization. It's more than just, hey, you're developing a product. Think about the infrastructure that your software is running on. You've got servers somewhere, whether it's there's a server in your company's headquarters, you're using Amazon's server in the cloud or Microsoft server in the cloud. You've got infrastructure that's running your software. How do you make sure that infrastructure is incredibly secure? Then you're writing code and developing applications on top of it. That was kind of what I was focused on earlier. Like, hey, as you develop each piece of code, make sure security is baked into you from the beginning. That's incredibly important. But then the next layer is we've got people that are using this software and helping explain it to the customers and helping deploy it in our providers' ecosystems. How do we keep security top of mind for them so they can educate our customers, they can spot things that don't look right and feed it back to our team? So you've got the infrastructure, you've got developing your own product on top of that infrastructure. Then you've got your people out there that are just using it every day. So security has to be thought through at every layer of your organization.
Okay, thanks for letting me take a little detour. Back to the resupply experience. When I was thinking about it, I was imagining that a good resupply experience would feel pretty seamless to the patient, meaning they get what they need when they need that, and there's no disruption. You know, they don't run out of the supplies. It's sort of a seamless transition to the next supply coming in, and they don't have to go through a lot of time and effort to get to that level. So then I wanted to know why that sort of outcome is important. And I started thinking about, for example, is it possible that a successful resupply program can actually help patients to comply or adhere to their physician instructions because the patients have the supplies they need when they need them so they can continue to do what their doctor is recommending they do? Is that sort of how you feel about a good patient experience? Is that one of the possible outcomes?
Yeah, it's. I think you're dead on, and there's multiple layers here. One, you know, we've seen studies that have been done proving that as patients resupply more often, they do stay on therapy longer. It's pretty intuitive. It makes a ton of sense from a humans are habit forming creatures. Hey, I wake up in the morning and I do 100 push-ups every day. If I skip a day, all of a sudden I skip 3 days, I skip 7 days, and I'm the guy that doesn't do push-ups anymore. Keeping patients on therapy, you know, our providers do such a great job of setting patients up and educating them on the machine, why the therapy is so beneficial to them. Keeping them on that therapy just continues to pay dividends for all the work you've already put in. It keeps that patient on therapy longer. It leads to them having a healthier life. It keeps them out of the hospital. All those things are great benefits at the patient level, but there's layers on top of that. So having that seamless experience does a couple of other things. One, it increases the value of the patient to the provider, frankly. If you are getting to the patients quickly when they need their stuff and getting it to them, like you said, when they need it, where they need it, they're going to order more often. And as a provider, you should be economically incented to have your patients ordering more often. Again, you should be benefiting that patient in their life, et cetera. Once you clear that hurdle, them resupplying more often, there's an economic incentive to the provider. So it's great for the provider from that economic standpoint. And then thirdly, you know, the negative disincentive there of, hey, let's say you aren't timely in reaching out to this patient and they are diligent about their therapy, they're going to find someone else. And all the work you did to educate that patient, like I said, at setup and tell them about their therapy and how it benefits them, somebody else is reaping all the rewards of that because you weren't there when your patient needed stuff and they couldn't remember your name because they don't think about you as much as you do. And they went on Google and said, I need a catheter. I need CPAP supplies. I need incontinence. So, boom. They've gone to ABC Medical that popped up the first on the Google search, and you've lost a patient that you worked really hard to attain. So the seamless patient experience is incredibly important across that whole span of activities.
And I imagine as well that if that person who is using catheters, urological supplies, incontinence supplies, et cetera, if they need a bath chair or a wheelchair or a cane or a bed or something like that, if they've had a great experience with you in the resupply, that could also kind of ripple effect over into additional sales and or word of mouth when family members, neighbors, friends are also looking for a reliable home medical equipment provider, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. So now speaking of those examples, I wanted to ask you about real life examples. If you have any case examples you can share with us, of course, without giving away too much private information, obviously, but this all sounds really good until you take it into the real world. And then what is it really like? So do you have any quantifiable customer results from providers you've worked with who've upgraded their resupply and their patient experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to share some kind of facts and data, but I'm not going to name names of the providers, even though I'm sure that they're proud of what they're doing. So on a couple different dimensions, one, if you think about the patient engagement experience, we have some providers that are very kind of forward-looking in this space where if you step back and say, hey, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 70% of patients getting resupply, 80% of patients getting resupply, it's because they're getting a phone call. Like, hey, it's time for your supplies, et cetera. We have providers now that have been building their business model over the last several years. They're at 75, 80% patients ordering via app, email, text, et cetera. They've designed their business to like, hey, we're gonna help patients that are aligned with this model, that want the convenience, the transparency, and the speed of electronic ordering. So we see providers, up in the 70 to 80% of their orders coming that way. So if you think about all the kind of hassles that for some patients come with a phone call of like, hey, I work all day, I can't answer the phone, and I get home and I call, and it's not your office hours. You can play phone tag for a week before getting an order. Those patients are being really well taken care of. In models like that, we have providers on the other end. But, hey, they're only doing 30-40% electronic orders, but they've got a great call-in program, and it has hours that are convenient for their patients. That we think the future is probably more towards that 60-80% of orders coming via the way people order everything else in their life. So we're trying to make sure our providers have tools to enable that. And then kind of on the results for the provider, we've been talking a lot about the patient experience. What we see, again, is more orders per year for these patients. So we can look into data on, frankly, millions of patients that are running through our system and see which ones are ordering electronically, which ones are ordering via phone calls, how often they order, et cetera. And the patients that are ordering electronically, frankly, we order 30 days faster than the patients that aren't. So that's a huge difference. It means as a provider, you're getting an extra half order or an extra order per year for every patient that you've onboarded into that ecosystem. So Super cool results that we see kind of consistent across providers that are really focusing on doing this well.
And I imagine that also a provider who has this seamless patient experience, in addition to perhaps getting more orders and having it help you financially, that also it improves or strengthens your relationship with referral partners, right? Because those physicians are hearing from their patients, oh, yes, I'm doing a great job with my compliance because my supplies are always there. I hardly have to think about it. They are fine to let me order by app or text or however I want to order. It doesn't even have to be the same way every time. There's a number of ways. So it's really convenient. I imagine that those physicians, number one, are really happy that their patients have what they need because then compliance goes up. But number two, those referring physicians might feel more confident in suggesting or recommending a provider, right? They might say, if you don't have a provider now, let me recommend XYZ Medical because some other patients have had a great experience with them.
Yeah, I think that's a great insight. And we do hear anecdotally from providers of just that providers, you know, are being proactive, not only with physicians, but payers. On saying, hey, here's the results of the patients you send to us in providing data. And I think these are some of the data points along with others around usage, et cetera, just to show you know, the other folks in this market the value of a great resupply program, because it is kind of a, healthcare is kind of a tricky beast. It's who's the customer? Is it the patient you're giving the equipment to? Is it the referral source that's sending you that patient? Or is it the payer that's actually paying for the equipment? It can be a confusing not to untangle there. So making sure each one of those constituents sees the value in your program and can give you feedback when there are things you need to change, that's fantastic.
I mean, yeah, the answer, I guess, to that question of who is your customer, the answer would be yes, they all are your customer at different levels, right? So you've got different people with kind of different, I guess, different goals, or sort of you deal with them in a different way. But ultimately, a resupply program that works well can improve and strengthen all of your relationships and even lead to future business or increased business today. So that's pretty wonderful. I wanted to ask also, though, going back to the security question, because obviously, you know, like you said, we're not selling shoes or hot dogs here. There's a lot of personal private information that legally needs to be protected. What are some of the biggest obstacles that you come across, that your providers have come across when they're trying to incorporate security into their system or trying to make sure that their system is optimally secure?
Yeah, no, this is a really good question. It's funny. I think one of the biggest obstacles that we see is understanding the regulatory environment. So I'll give you an example. We mentioned text as one mode of outreach to patients saying, hey, you're ready for your stuff. There are 50 states in our country. So that means there's probably 65 different laws around how you can do it. We see texting holidays that are different state by state of, you know, you can't text on certain times of day. You can't text certain holidays, certain days of week. But then you'll have, you know, state ABC that has Pioneer Day, and no other state in the country celebrates Pioneer Day on July 6th, but this state does, and you can't text patients. So understand, for our providers to understand when they can outreach and what modes they can outreach and all those nuances, that's really tough because it's one more thing for a provider to keep track of. We don't want to be a law firm or kind of keep track of that for people. It's not a service we provide. Our software allows people to configure around those, like, hey, I don't want to text on this day, that, between these hours. You can do all kinds of configuration there, but that's one of the biggest obstacles of what can I legally do to make this fast and convenient for patients? Because I don't think anyone out there is trying to do anything besides provide a great experience for their patient, but it can be frustrating and confusing. And you see, oh, somebody got sued because of texting, or you know, this happened with an email outreach. Just knowing the landscape and helping providers navigate it successfully through our software is that's a big challenge.
Yeah, I live in California, but my family is from Hawaii, and they have a whole slew of like Hawaiian holidays that I'm never quite aware of. And so I can see how customization, or being able to customize a system to sort of help a provider keep track, right? So a provider can say, especially providers who work in more than one state, like you said, right? If you are in the part of the country where you're working with multiple states, like maybe you're in New England or you're in the middle of the country, and you have different states have different holidays, offices are closed different days. I guess the ability to customize for the provider to be able to say, okay, on this day in, you know, in New England, we don't want to send anything. We don't want to send anything to Maine that day. I think that leads into my last question. And I did want to spend, you know, give you some time to spend a few minutes on this. If HME suppliers are looking to invest in resupply and want to do it securely, I wanted to go over sort of what some of the questions they should be asking, or what some of the features and benefits they should be looking for. And I assume that ability to customize your system would potentially be one of those things that suppliers would want to look for and make sure that their vendor could supply. First of all, is that correct? And then second of all, what other questions do you think when a supplier is looking to sort of interview a potential vendor, what sort of questions should we be asking?
Okay, great question. You brought up a really important facet of this, that it isn't just about providers understanding the regulatory environment. It's the complexity of the patient. Because for your example, you might have an 808 area code on your phone, and you might live in the 509. And so those are 2-3 time zones apart, depending on the time of the year. And so if like, hey, can we text Lori today? What state is she in? Her billing address is San Diego, and her phone number says she lives on Maui. Like, how do I figure this out? So that's just another wrinkle that providers have to think through. It's more than just what state is the provider in, what state is the patient in? Because as you have patients across those various states, and you know, phone numbers and addresses not matching up, I've got a West Coast phone number and I live multiple time zones away. So I'm a great example of this as well. So that's just one more wrinkle to think about as a provider of how do you think through all the nuances. So I think there's probably multiple steps to go through when interviewing a partner. One, just start with the structure of this podcast a little bit. Like, what is this provider's vision for the patient experience? Do they have the same vision that you're trying to provide to your patients? Do they have a roadmap for building that out? Obviously, it'd be great if they had that right now and they could show you all the bells and whistles. A lot of solutions we see in the market don't have fully built out solutions yet, but do they have a roadmap where they're showing, hey, here's the things we're adding and our vision matches yours as a provider? That's a great place to start. If you don't have that, I don't think anything else you do is going to matter. Aligning on vision for the patient experience. And then once you start really kicking the tires, it's just asking a lot of questions around some of the things we covered here today of, what is your stance on security? How do you manage security on a day-to-day basis in your organization? Do you have external auditors that come in on a regular basis and test your security protocols? Do you do penetration testing? It's one of the things we do. We hire outside firms to try and break in. Like, hey, we will pay you to try and hack our software. So you learn a lot through exercises like that. Do they have a regular program for patching all their software? So if you think about your phone, you open it up in the morning and it says, hey, I've got 15 updates, and you've got 15 apps out there that need to be updated, your travel app and your banking app and your podcast app, whatever. It's the same thing in the software world. If you're a developer that's writing code for a commercial company that's selling software, they're using 15, 20 different tools to do that. And each one of those tools is constantly getting patches put out there by the company saying, hey, we found a security hole, you need to update this, or hey, we modernized our infrastructure, you need to update this. Those aren't automatic. These vendors need to go out there and stay on top of all the patches that are happening in their ecosystem and keep updating the tools, keep updating the software they're using to write software. So, kind of a funny little cycle there. But just the basic hygiene questions around security and kick the tires on these providers to make sure you're comfortable putting your patient's data in their hands to safeguard for the patient and for you. Nobody wants to be involved in an incident where their patients are negatively affected. We take this very seriously, and we hope the whole industry does.
Mike, thanks so much. And with that, we'll be wrapping up this podcast with Mike Lorenz from Brightree. Mike, thanks so much for being with me.
Thanks, Laurie. It was nice meeting you.
My thanks also to Brightree for their time and sponsorship. HME Business Podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes is to subscribe. And you can also go to our website, hme-business.com, to listen there. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll be back again soon.